So it's Travel Tuesday, which means we have a slot where we discuss all things travel related. And I can't think of anybody better to speak to than Dan Brotman. Dan is on the phone right now. He is a travel and digital storyteller and oh so much more. And it's been a long time. Dan Brotman, how are you? And thanks for being with me on Chai FM this afternoon.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me and greetings from Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Yeah, let me tell you something. Between you and me, I follow you on Facebook. I know exactly where you are. I know where you've been and I know who you're meeting with. So there. I certainly want to have a second discussion with you about your experiences in South America, but there's a huge big elephant in the room which happened to you not too long ago, and it's Lebanon that I want to chat to you about this afternoon, if you're okay with that.
Absolutely.
So Dan felt it necessary to visit Lebanon. I must say I would too. It's a place I would love to visit. Perhaps proximity to Israel, exoticism, I don't know. The only difference is that Dan was arrested. Dan, give us the story. What happened?
Well, I'll start off by saying that I've been to Lebanon several times. My first time in Lebanon was in 2021, which was the year after the infamous port blast. I actually wrote an article for the largest newspaper in Canada about what I saw in Lebanon. I returned a second time a year later. So I had been to Lebanon several times. I've traveled throughout the Arab and Muslim world. Absolutely no issue. Basically, what happened most recently is I actually went to Syria. So I was part of the largest Western tour group to return to Syria since the revolution.
Oh, wow.
And our tour began in Lebanon, and then we would just drive an hour and a half to the border, cross the border, and then begin the tour in Syria. So about 3 months ago, this was in May, I landed in Beirut. Absolutely no issue. It was my third time in Lebanon. Slept over in Beirut. We left the next day. We went to Syria. I had an incredible experience in Syria for those 8 days. And then at the end of the Syria trip, we had to cross back into Lebanon by land so that we could catch our flights home. I handed my passport over to the official on the Lebanese side of the border. Again, this is my fourth time crossing into Lebanon. Had never had an issue before. And he stared at the screen for way too long and then stood up and said, come with me. And that's when my ordeal began.
Can I just interrupt you for one moment, Dan? Yeah. What passport are you traveling on at this point?
For that trip, it was an American passport because Americans don't need a visa for Lebanon, but South Africans do.
Okay.
So they took me to a back room and they just told me it's a name mix up, nothing to worry about. You'll be out of here in a few minutes. You know, but I became highly suspicious because this had never happened to me before. And in the back of my mind, I was wondering, wow, like, have they sort of discovered who I actually am? Again, I've been to Iran, I've been to Iraq, never had an issue. And then they said, we just need to speak to Beirut. We'll be back in a few minutes. So they came back from speaking to Beirut and they said, Daniel, have you ever served in the Israeli army? And the minute they asked me that question, I knew that I couldn't lie because they were asking it for a reason.
Terrifying.
I told them that I told them that I had. Again, they went away, they came back, and then they said, we are suspending you. And I didn't understand what suspending meant. I didn't know, did it mean arrest? Did it mean detain? They took my cell phone, my watch, my wallet, and then they put me in a holding cell, a dark holding cell for hours. My tour group was at the border. Everyone had crossed successfully except for me. And suddenly the peephole slammed open. And it was our tour leader. And she said, Dan, they're making us leave the border. There's nothing else we can do to help you. You're going to be transferred to a facility in Beirut. I'm going to call the U.S. Embassy and contact your family. And then right after she said that, one of the soldiers pointed at me and started shouting, Israeli soldier, Israeli soldier. And at that point, I really understood that I probably wasn't going to be going home anytime soon. They then left, and then I was just completely on my own. I was transferred to a different city called Zakhle. I was held there for hours, and then I was handcuffed and taken to the headquarters of the equivalent of the CIA/ICE in Beirut. It's called General Security, which was controlled by Hezbollah up until 2023. And I believe today it still has to be controlled by a Shia Muslim, according to the Lebanese constitution. I slept in a very dark, cold cell the first night. From the second night onwards, they allowed me to sleep in an office, but I was handcuffed for days. I went through interrogations, you know, probably 8-hour interrogations every day. I want to reiterate that I was never afforded a lawyer. So there were never charges against me. I was a judge that was hearing my case, but I never got to appear in front of a judge, no legal representation. On day three, I met with the U.S. Embassy. I remember when I met with the consul, he said, your case is all I've been working on for the past 2 days. My case, actually, my understanding is my case went all the way up to the White House. It was also very sensitive timing. President Trump was about to arrive in Riyadh and meet with the Lebanese president, and I was being held. The Americans told me they didn't want Israel finding out about it because that would then turn me into a bargaining chip.
Exactly what I was thinking, yeah, Dan. Yeah. Exactly what I was thinking. You know, I'm listening to you talk and you're sounding so cool, calm and collected. I understand some time has passed. But I mean, at the end of the day, when that guy turned around and said to you, Israeli soldier, you became a kidnap victim, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I know that, you know, friends and family on the outside were worried that I could be assassinated while I was being held there. I mean, again, anyone could have come in and done something to me. I think I might have been the only former IDF soldier being held in Lebanon at the time. But I didn't allow my mind to go there because you're in survival mode. Okay. So if I was worried that I was going to be assassinated, I wouldn't be able to eat. I wouldn't be able to sleep or function.
Wow.
So I didn't allow my mind to go there. But at the same time, I almost felt like I was disappeared. I didn't know who on the outside world knew about what was happening to me. I didn't know when I was going to go home. There were no formal charges laid against me. And my ordeal went on for 6 days. The Lebanese tortured prisoners around me. They never harmed me physically. But I mean, there was one day they took a prisoner that I was being held with and they put a bag over his head, took him to an adjacent room and started playing Russian roulette, where they had one bullet in the gun and would start shooting him. And every time they would shoot, he would scream.
Oh, my goodness.
So there were many, many experiences I had while I was there, many human rights violations that I saw. Eventually on day six, I was released. I was blindfolded, handcuffed, and taken to the Beirut airport. And I departed Lebanon successfully. I'm actually filing a complaint at the United Nations against Lebanon. They have a committee at the United Nations on arbitrary detention. And I believe that Lebanon violated international law on several levels in detaining me in the way they did. And I'm actually working with the Lawfare Project. Brooke Goldstein was recently in South Africa, so they've been amazing working with them to prepare my case. I was very traumatized when I got out of Lebanon. Definitely the first week was the hardest. I still think often about what happened, but I'm, of course, pretty much back to normal, but it was a very scarring experience.
And I see you wrote an article or two about how the revelation of your story was received or not received by international press.
Absolutely. And that was one of the hardest parts. I actually say that my release was harder than my detainment in some ways. When I got out, I mean, basically when all of these terrible things were happening and I was being held in Lebanon, something that kept me going every day was I would tell myself, they're not going to get away with this. When I get out of here eventually, I'm going to tell my story. I'm going to tell exactly what happened to me and other people. And I found that especially in my native United States, no news organization was interested in telling my story. They were very interested in talking about Mahmoud Khalil and other pro-Palestinian international students who were being held by ICE, but they didn't find a story about an actual American being detained without charges with no legal representation is newsworthy. And I just want to add that I'm incredibly, incredibly grateful to the South African Jewish community, because it was the South African Jewish Report that was the first news outlet to report on what happened to me. There were other outlets eventually, you know, told the story, but it was the South African community that really, helped me tell my story. But it was very disheartening for me that the American media didn't think it was newsworthy what had happened. Again, I really think I'm one of the very, very few dual Israeli citizens who did IDF army service who was held in Lebanon like this. The other thing that was very difficult was victim blaming. Some people saying, you deserve this. What were you thinking? You're crazy. Putting it all on me. But the truth is, you know, Lebanon violating international law and treating both me and the prisoners I was with in the way that they did is completely inexcusable. And I don't find victim blaming helpful at all.
Dan, I'm going to have to leave it there because I'm out of time, but that was absolutely scintillating and fascinating. I hope that's the first of many conversations that we'll have.